Chapter 21. Could go to the next gentleman's house to see for a service, whereas, apostrophe said he, I knew not whither to go, or what to do with myself. Apostrophe, I told him I was so completely miserable in parting with him, that I could not be worse, and that now he was come again, I would not go from him, if he would take me with him, let him go whither he would, or do what he would. And in the meantime I agreed, that we would go together to London, but I could not be brought to consent he should go away at last, and not take his leave of me, as he proposed to do, but told him, jesting, that if he did, I would call him back again as loud as I did before. Then I pulled out his watch, and gave it him back, and his 2 rings, and his 10 guineas, but he would not take them, which made me very much suspect, that he resolved to go off upon the road and leave me. The truth is, the circumstances he was in, the passionate expressions of his letter, the kind, gentlemanly treatment I had from him in all the affair, with the concern he showed for me in it, his manner of parting with that large share which he gave me of his little stock left all these adjoined to make such impressions on me, that I really loved him most tenderly, and could not bear the thoughts of parting with him. 2 days after this we quitted Chester, I in the stagecoach, and he on horseback. I dismissed my maid at Chester. He was very much against my being without a maid, but she being a servant hired in the country, and I resolving to keep no servant at London, I told him it would have been barbarous, to have taken the poor wench, and have turned her away, as soon as I came to town, and it would also have been a needless charge on the road, so I satisfied him, and he was easy enough on the score. He came with me as far as Dunstable, within 30 miles of London, and then he told me fate, and his own misfortunes obliged him to leave me, and that it was not convenient for him to go to London, for reasons which it was of no value to me to know, and I saw him preparing to go. The stagecoach we were in did not usually stop at Dunstable, but I desiring it, but for a quarter of an hour, they were content to stand at an inn door a while, and we went into the house. Being in the inn, I told him I had but one favor more to ask of him, and that was, that since he could not go any farther, he would give me leave to stay a week or two in the town with him, that we might in that time think of something to prevent such a ruinous thing to us both, as a final separation would be, and that I had something of moment to offer him, that I had never said yet, and which perhaps he might find practicable to our mutual advantage. This was too reasonable a proposal to be denied, so he called the landlady of the house, and told her his wife was taken ill, and so ill, that she could not think of going any farther in the stagecoach, which had tired her almost to death, and asked if she could not get us a lodging for 2 or 3 days in a private house, where I might rest me a little, for the journey had been too much for me. The landlady, a good sort of woman, well bred and very obliging, came immediately to see me, told me she had 2 or 3 very good rooms in a part of the house quite out of the noise, and if I saw them, she did not doubt, but I would like them, and I should have one of her maids, that should do nothing else, but be appointed to wait on me. This was so very kind, that I could not, but accept of it, and thank her. So I went to look on the rooms, and liked them very well, and indeed they were extraordinarily furnished, and very pleasant lodgings. So we paid the stagecoach, took out our baggage, and resolved to stay here a while. Here I told him I would live with him now till all my money was spent, but would not let him spend a shilling of his own. We had some kind squabble about that, but I told him it was the last time I was like to enjoy his company, and I desired he would let me be master in that thing only, and he should govern in everything else, so he acquiesced. Here one evening, taking a walk into the fields, I told him I would now make the proposal to him I had told him of. Accordingly I related to him, how I had lived in Virginia, that I had a mother I believed, was alive there still, though my husband was dead some years. I told him that had not my effects miscarried, Which, by the way, I magnified pretty much. I might have been fortunate good enough to him to have kept us from being parted in this manner. Then I entered into the manner of peoples going over to those countries to settle, how they had a quantity of land given them by the constitution of the place, and if not, that it might be purchased at so easy a rate this, it was not worth naming. I then gave him a full and distinct account of the nature of planting, how with carrying over, but 200 or 300 pounds value in English goods, with some servants and tools, a man of application would presently lay a foundation for a family, and in a very few years be certain to raise an estate. I led him into the nature of the product of the earth, how the ground was cured and prepared, and what the usual increase of it was, and demonstrated to him, that in a very few years, with such a beginning, we should be as certain of being rich as we were now certain of being poor. He was surprised at my discourse, for we made it the whole subject of our conversation for near a week together, in which time I laid it down in black and white, as we say, that it was morally impossible, with a supposition of any reasonable good conduct, but that we must thrive there, and do very well. Then I told him, what measures I would take to raise such a sum of number 300 or thereabouts. And I argued with him, how good a method it would be, to put an end to our misfortunes, and restore our circumstances in the world, to what we had both expected. And I added, that after 7 years, if we lived, we might be in a posture, to leave our plantations in good hands, and come over again, and receive the income of it, and live here and enjoy it. And I gave him examples of some that had done so, and lived now in very good circumstances in London. In short, I pressed him so to it, that he almost agreed to it, but still something or other broke it off again, till at last he turned the tables, and he began to talk almost to the same purpose of Ireland. He told me, that a man, that could confine himself to country life, and that could find, but stock to enter upon any land, should have farms there for number 50 a year, as good as were here let for number 200 a year, that the produce was such, and so rich the land, that if much was not laid up, we were sure to live as handsomely upon it as a gentleman of number 3,000 a year could do in England, and that he had laid a scheme, to leave me in London, and go over and try, and if he found he could lay a handsome foundation of living suitable to the respect he had for me, as he doubted not he should do, he would come over and fetch me. I was dreadfully afraid, that upon such a proposal he would have taken me at my word, viz. To sell my little income as I called it, and turn it into money, and let him carry it over into Ireland, and try his experiment with it. But he was too just to desire it, or to have accepted it, if I had offered it, and he anticipated me in that, for he added, that he would go, and try his fortune that way, and if he found he could do anything at it to live, then, by adding mine to it when I went over, we should live like ourselves, but that he would not hazard a shilling of mine till he had made the experiment with a little, and he assured me that, if he found nothing to be done in Ireland, he would then come to me, and join in my project for Virginia. He was so earnest upon his project, being to be tried first, that I could not withstand him. However, he promised to let me hear from him in a very little time after his arriving there, to let me know, whether his prospect answered his design, that if there was not a possibility of success, I might take the occasion, to prepare for our other voyage, and then, he assured me, he would go with me to America with all his heart. I could bring him to nothing further than this. However, those consultations entertained us near a month, during which I enjoyed his company, which indeed was the most entertaining, that ever I met in my life before. And this time he let me into the whole story of his own life, which was indeed surprising, and full of an infinite variety sufficient to fill up a much brighter history, for its adventures and incidents, than any I ever say in print, but I shall have occasion, to say more of him hereafter. We parted at last, though with the utmost reluctance on my side, And indeed he took his leave very unwillingly too, but necessity obliged him, for his reasons were very good, why he would not come to London, as I understood more fully some time afterwards. I gave him a direction, how to write to me, though still I reserved the grand secret, and never broke my resolution, which was not to let him ever know my true name, who I was, or where to be found. He likewise let me know how to write a letter to him, so that, he said, he would be sure to receive it. I came to London the next day after we parted, but did not go directly to my old lodgings, but for another nameless reason took a private lodging in St. John Street, or, as it is vulgarly called, St. Jones, near Clerkenwell. And here, being perfectly alone, I had leisure to sit down, and reflect seriously upon the last 7 months' ramble I had made, for I had been abroad no less. The pleasant hours I had with my last husband I looked back on with an infinite deal of pleasure, but that pleasure was very much lessened, when I found some time after, that I was really with child. This was a perplexing thing, because of the difficulty which was before me, where I should get leave to lie in, it being one of the nicest things in the world at that time of day for a woman, that was a stranger, and had no friends, to be entertained in that circumstance without security, which, by the way, I had not, neither could I procure any. I had taken care all this, while to preserve a correspondence with my honest friend at the bank, or rather he took care to correspond with me, for he wrote to me once a week, and though I had not spent my money so fast as to want any from him, yet I often wrote also, to let him know I was alive. I had left directions in Lancashire, so that I had these letters, which he sent, conveyed to me, and during my recess at St. John's received a very obliging letter from him, assuring me that his process for a divorce from his wife went on with success, though he met with some difficulties in it that he did not expect. I was not displeased with the news that his process was more tedious than he expected. For though I was in no condition to have him yet, not being so foolish to marry him, when I knew myself to be with child by another man, as some I know have ventured to do, yet I was not willing to lose him, and, in a word, resolved to have him, if he continued in the same mind, as soon as I was up again, for I saw apparently I should hear no more from my husband. And as he had all along pressed to marry, and had assured me he would not be at all disgusted at it, or ever offer to claim me again, so I made no scruple to resolve to do it if I could, and if my other friend stood to his bargain, and I had a great deal of reason to be assured that he would stand to it, by the letters he wrote to me, which were the kindest and most obliging that could be. I now grew big, and the people where I lodged perceived it, and began to take notice of it to me, and, as far as civility would allow, intimated that I must think of removing. This put me to extreme perplexity, and I grew very melancholy, for indeed I knew not what course to take. I had money, but no friends, and was like to have a child upon my hands to keep, which was a difficulty I had never had upon me yet, as the particulars of my story hitherto make appear. In the course of this affair I fell very ill, and my melancholy really increased my distemper. My illness proved at length to be only an ague, but my apprehensions were really that I should miscarry. I should not say apprehensions, for indeed I would have been glad to miscarry, but I could never be brought to entertain so much as a thought of endeavoring to miscarry, or of taking anything to make me miscarry. I abhorred, I say, so much as the thought of it. However, speaking of it in the house, the gentlewoman who kept the house proposed to me to send for a midwife. I scrupled it at first, but after some time consented to it, but told her I had no particular acquaintance with any midwife, and so left it to her. It seems the mistress of the house was not so great a stranger to such cases as mine was as I thought at first she had been, as will appear presently, and she sent for a midwife of the right sort, that is to say, the right sort for me. The woman appeared to be an experienced woman in her business, I mean as a midwife. But she had another calling too, in which she was as expert as most women if not more. My landlady had told her I was very melancholy, and that she believed that had done me harm, and once, before me, said to her, apostrophe Mrs. B apostrophe, meaning the midwife, I believe this lady's trouble is of a kind that is pretty much in your way, and therefore if you can do anything for her, pray do, for she is a very civil gentlewoman. And so she went out of the room. I really did not understand her, but my mother Midnight began very seriously to explain what she mean, as soon as she was gone. Madam, apostrophe says she, you seem not to understand what your landlady means, and when you do understand it, you need not let her know at all that you do so. She means that you are under some circumstances that may render your lying in difficult to you, and that you are not willing to be exposed. I need say no more, but to tell you, that if you think fit to communicate so much of your case to me, if it be so, as is necessary, for I do not desire to pry into those things, I perhaps may be in a position to help you, and to make you perfectly easy, and remove all your dull thoughts upon that subject. Apostrophe, every word this creature said was a cordial to me, and put new life and new spirit into my heart. My blood began to circulate immediately, and I was quite another body. I ate my victuals again, and grew better presently after it. She said a great deal more to the same purpose, and then, having pressed me to be free with her, and promised in the solemnest manner to be secret, she stopped a little, as if waiting to see what impression it made on me, and what I would say. I was too sensible to the want I was in of such a woman, not to accept her offer. I told her my case was partly as she guessed, and partly not, for I was really married, and had a husband, though he was in such fine circumstances, and so remote at that time, as that he could not appear publicly. She took me short, and told me that was none of her business. All the ladies that came under her care were married women to her. Every woman, apostrophe she says, that is with child has a father for it, apostrophe and whether that father was a husband or no husband, was no business of hers. Her business was to assist me in my present circumstances, whether I had a husband or no. For, madam, apostrophe says she, to have a husband, that cannot appear, is to have no husband in the sense of the case. And, therefore, whether you are a wife or a mistress is all one to me. Apostrophe, I found presently, that whether I was a whore or a wife, I was. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.